Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School, the podcast where you get fresh insight from leaders at top tech companies and startups. Remember, you can learn product management in person at our 15 campuses worldwide or study with us online. Visit productschool.com to learn more about our courses. You can also hang out with the leaders from these podcasts at our hundreds of annual events and catch us at ProductCon, the world's largest PM conference that takes place every year across the United States and in London.
Hi, everyone. I'm super excited to be here. I am a senior product manager at Twitch. I'm going to just pretty much go into talking about my career, how I actually got into product management, and then how I actually transitioned from hardware into software product management. So it's going to be a fun journey. I'm a senior product manager at Twitch right now. I'm also on the founding team and the CEO of the Vile Society, which is a female founders group that's been running for about a year and a half. And I'm also a business lead and the board member of Hack Mental Health, which is a nonprofit for supporting people in the mental health community and building out new technologies. So about my career. So I started off at the University of Utah. I was born and raised there, and my background is actually marketing and psychology, so I don't have a tech background. I graduated in 2014, and the HBS here is just a fancy way of saying that I wrote a thesis in college, and it was about how do you influence consumers through psychology? How do you influence the decisions they make and build products around that? And then I was actually an associate product manager through college. I was at CR Bard, which is now part of BD, and I worked on building out their peripherally inserted central catheters, just call it PICs, and I helped build out that division. It was really interesting because when I started there, we were a single team, and after the work that we did, we actually ended up splitting our team into two separate groups. And I actually helped support build out a separate franchise. And that's really where I learned I like product management. It wasn't just building out certain products, but it's the strategy behind building out new divisions, figuring out what it really takes to help a customer and really focus around customer needs, which is really what product management is about in the end. It's about who your customers are and how you build something that supports them. And then after that, I actually started HP in 2015, right out of undergrad. I was a product manager on their mobility team. So it was a startup within HP, pretty much. It was a team that was about a year old, and we were building commercial tablets and detachables. So for me, it was a really fun time. I actually joined the company as a junior product manager, but by the time I actually started my job, I had a brand new manager who didn't even know who I was. And she's like, oh, will you send me your resume since I have no idea what you've ever done? And then I joined the team, launched a product halfway through execution because the product manager had left. And after that, I actually saw there was a lot of opportunity in the education space. And a lot of people weren't playing in that market where people were building these really expensive devices like Chromebooks, but they weren't targeting elementary schools where they really don't have the budget to build these products. So I ended up saying, hey, I want to build a product in this space. What is it going to take for me to actually do this? And my manager said, okay, write out a product spec, write the business plan, figure out the strategy, and then pitch it to the management team. And if they say yes, then you'll get people to work on it with you. So I pretty much did that, and it's still shipping. So just for like framework, a typical hardware product only ships for about 2 years. It is now its fifth year of shipping. So fourth to fifth year of shipping. And that comes with its own challenges, like refreshing components and things. But for me, it was really exciting because it was the very first product I ever built. And it's still in like doubled six-digit revenue. So that was kind of what really set my stage at HP. And from there, I just got put on more exciting projects. I got put on projects where I had to literally fly to China to build and pitch strategy to different companies to figure out how we could help them in the education space. For example, we wanted to enter the China education market. How do you really do that in a space that's really taken over by MacBook, right? Everyone there either has an Android device or an Apple device. There's really no place for Windows. So that was a lot of what I worked on for about 2.5 to 3 years. And then after that, I actually got moved over to the notebooks team where I helped their healthcare notebook launch. This was a space that no one actually has ever entered. If you look at the healthcare market, there's a lot of devices and notebooks out there that happen to work in the industry, but nothing specifically thinking about doctors and nurses and what they really need. So my job, pretty much, when I joined the team, they'd already started working on this product, but no one had really organized a team around it. There was really no process around it. So I kind of came in and shepherded the sheep, is the way they put it, and kind of made everyone do the right part so we could actually get the product out to launch. It was really exciting. There was so much great feedback from customers, and that's really what it came down to. Customers are happy with the product. You had a self-sanitizing device, right? There's no microbial layer on any other notebook out there. You had a device that could actually scan your finger instead of having to go do two-step authentication for medication. So I was there for that launch, and then I worked on their second product that is in the process of launching later this year. And then I decided, you know, it's time for a change. I decided to move into software because I really wanted to help build products at a faster pace. And hardware, you're building a product early, and you have to plan it from stage one, and then you wait 9 months for it to launch, and then you learn about your customer feedback. So for me, I was like, I want faster iteration cycles. I want to help people. I want to build something that I know the immediate result, and then I can fix that and keep building on top of that. So now I'm at Twitch. I've been there for a while now, and I'm working on some really fun, exciting features, learning a lot about agile methodologies, which is not hardware. Hardware is waterfall, but it was an interesting journey. I actually ended up... It's not working. Wait. There it is. Okay, I actually ended up coming to product school. I was actually a student here in July of last year, because a lot of the things I was seeing was that people were worried about having someone from hardware go into software. A lot of what software has is being able to move quickly. So when you're in a hardware environment where you're literally planning out every little step, people didn't want to take that risk. They did not want to say, oh, we're going to hire someone who has no experience in software, right? I know how to design the inside of a notebook, but I do not know how to do an A-B test, which isn't rocket science. So for me, it was very, very, it was really hard because people, I would go through the interview, I would literally get to the last stage, would be between me and one other person, and I wouldn't get the job, even though I had about 3.5 years of experience at that point. So I decided, you know, what's missing on my resume? And I'm going to walk you guys through how I figured that out and what I realized were my gaps, and the steps I took to actually fill those gaps so I could actually get the job I wanted. Okay. Oh, it worked. Okay. So this was my challenge. Pretty much we have the differences between, okay, technology. One sec. Okay. Where's the mouse? Okay. Okay. So we have hardware and software, right? When you're talking about hardware, you're really talking about components, pieces. So you work with chipsets, you work with wireless LAN modules, you're working with literally you're testing out keyboards to see which one has type efficiency and which one clicks more, which one doesn't click more. Literally, you're in the details of building something physical and tangible. Software is really, really focused around user experience and user interfaces, right? Everything goes back to the design and how a user interacts with the product itself. With hardware, you do a lot of market forecasting. You can talk to some of your customers if you're in the B2B space, because you can literally say, hey, what are you guys looking for? What are you trying to purchase? But other than that, you're literally going through reports, understanding what people are building, and then you're taking a step further and saying, if this product is in the market for 2 to 3 years, what do I have to forecast? What do I think technology is going, and what do I build so that my product is future-proof? So that's really what hardware is. It's looking in the moment, but actually not building what is happening right now. Because if I design a product today and it comes out end of the year, it's probably going to be outdated already. So really thinking through those pieces versus when you're in software, you're literally thinking about data. You're literally thinking about what is my historical data? How can I forecast my data again? But then how do I drive my numbers? How do I drive my metrics? And then you can go iterate if something doesn't work. It's all about experimentation and making those quick changes. Again, early planning, I kind of went over this, but for a product, depending on like what the complexity of your product, takes 9 to 12 months to just build a hardware device. You don't really have the luxury of changing it halfway through. Whatever you kick off, whatever you end up planning is what you ship. Like, you cannot make changes. It's millions of dollars to build a product. So making changes is just not an option at that point. with software, you can just build an MVP. You can test something out. You can test out concepts and say, does this work? Does this not work? Let me go do some user feedback. Let me talk to people if they like this concept. And then if they don't like it, okay, let me just like not waste a month, 2 months of energies building something, and let me go fix it. Let me go iterate it. 2 to 3 year life cycle, so future-proofing your product. And you can literally roll out weekly features in an agile environment. You can literally say, okay, I decide that I want to run an experiment for a week and see what, how people act. Do they like a red button? If they like the red button, I'm going to launch this 100%. Okay, what's my next experiment? It's a week later. Hardware, you're doing a lot of vendor management. So you're literally flying out to different manufacturers and you're making sure you're evaluating their factory line. You're trying to make sure that they have certain policies in place. You're trying to make sure that they have testing in place. You're literally making sure they have this giant machine you can put a laptop in and spin around for like 20,000 rotations to make sure the product doesn't break. So you have a lot of quality testing and you're making sure your factories are efficient and that you're getting the right pricing. And then you're also managing stakeholders within your company and other companies as well to make sure everyone's aligned. It's a lot. With software, yes, you're managing external companies when you're working on bigger projects that might be like cross-functional, but mainly you're working with people inside your own company. You're talking to your executive team, you're kind of selling to them, and you're communicating your vision. You're also communicating visions to your peers, the people who are working on your team, right? Product management is all about managing people without the authority to manage them. So really having that relationship with people. And then with hardware, you have the financial responsibility. I talked about how building a single product is millions of dollars. It's a lot to make those changes. You also have engineers you're working with. You have designers. You have all these other people you have to manage. And you have a P&L you have to manage. So if your product doesn't ship successfully and you don't have high revenue, your product's in trouble. Versus with software, the majority of the financials I've dealt with has literally been engineering cost and making sure we're actually validating the amount of time it'll take for engineers to build something out. Okay, so this is really what I've learned makes a great PM. You have your hard skills. So you have to be very customer-centric. Any thought you have, anything you're trying to build has to go back to the customer. What is the customer problem? Why is this a problem? How can I fix this problem? Is this really how I should be fixing the problem? And literally asking why at every single step until you really satisfy that answer. Having very structured thinking. So really thinking through a process, having your own framework to think through things. What's worked for me is really figuring out where have I messed up? Why am I freaking out right now? And then writing that down and building my own framework. Everyone has their own framework, so you can't really find one that's like in a book, but you really have to kind of think through how am I, if I was working on this product, if I was using this product, what do I wish people were actually thinking about when they built it? And then writing that down. Being very data driven. I can't stress that enough. It is so important to actually look at how data is being tracked in your own company, how you are using that data to make your decisions, and literally thinking, okay, if I make this change, which metric am I driving? KPIs are so important. If you're moving a metric the wrong direction, then you know that product isn't working, and that's why you experiment. So really making sure that everything you do is like grounded in data, but also grounded in your gut, right? Like you can only use data so far. Data isn't gonna, it can predict the future to an extent. So really thinking, okay, if you wanna be innovative, you can't just go with a trend line. You have to kind of figure out how do I make this move a lot? And then communicating. This is something I don't think anyone will ever get perfect at. Communicating with other people is very, very hard. You have to really learn other people's communication styles, but if you communicate really well to people, you sell people on your vision. You sell people on your vision, you get alignment on your project. And if you get alignment on your project, it's just, it's smooth sailing. Okay, and then there's a lot of soft skills involved with product as well. So being very, very empathetic. So empathy with your users, really understanding what their problem is. When I started at Twitch, the first thing I did was literally sit down and start streaming and figuring out what it is that people do when they stream. I streamed for like 5 hours and it was exhausting, but now I understood my customer. I literally went through all the steps we asked them to go through and I would say, how do you optimize this? Why would people want to actually do this? And literally putting that hat on of your customer. Next is user experience. I am very big on user experience. I think a strong product always thinks about their user, always thinks about how the user will interact with the product, and literally thinking about whether something needs to be soft touch or heavy touch. That means if I go to a page, do I want like pop-ups where people are telling me like what I should do? Or do I just want like a subtle gesture, right? What's the psychology behind it? And how are people, why are people going to this part of your product? What is their intention? And how can I optimize that intention? And then building relationships. You will be working with engineers and designers and data analysts and data scientists and your management team, and you have to get everyone aligned on this vision. And the best way you do that is by building a relationship with them. You're not going to build a relationship automatically, but them knowing they can trust you, that you're making decisions that are best for your customer, for the team, for the business, that is all they care about. And you have to be able to listen to them. People need to feel like they can come to you and talk to you and trust you, and that you'll actually take what they say and run with it and actually try to validate it or disprove it through data. People want to be heard. And I run into this a lot where people kind of feel like they can't be heard, listened to, or they feel don't feel comfortable voicing their opinion. And that is not a great environment to work in, because innovation comes through everyone thinking, right? You can't say, I'm a product manager, I'm going to make the decision here, this is my vision. Vision comes from a team, a group of people building something really exciting together. And then at the end, negotiation. Even though you have everyone's opinions around you, you have to filter out the noise, which is very, very hard. But filtering out that noise really comes down to, do you know your customer problem? If you know your customer problem, all the noise around you kind of disappears and you know what the right way to go is. And that's when you negotiate with people, saying, this is what my customer is facing, this is why I think we need to do it. And I've never faced a situation where that hasn't worked, because it's all grounded in my customer. Okay, but in the end, when you're actually trying to get a job in product, when you're being hired into product, there are some key things besides these two that a company is really looking for. They're looking for someone that comes in with a new perspective. So for me, I came in with a hardware perspective. So I literally knew nothing about gamers on Twitch or any of these other type of people who stream our content. So bringing in that new perspective and really selling that, like, you know something for a reason. The reason you are in that room and you got the interview in the first place is because there's something you have that other people don't. So really owning that, having vision. So not just thinking like in the current state, right? Like, your product might do something right now, but what's the potential? What could it do in the future? And being able to say, I think there's so many opportunities here, but I understand what the current state is and why that is happening. Having a growth mindset. I literally went through an interview where I was told they wouldn't interview me because I've never done A/B testing before. That is not growth mindset, and I would not feel comfortable working in that environment, because everyone around you has something to offer, and realizing that when you work with people, and making that a value, right? People have amazing opinions, and that is so important. And then at the end, enthusiasm. I have been called very energetic as a person. I love it. I embrace it. But really being enthusiastic about what you work on, why you want a job at that place, not just going for the sake of a job. Be really, really excited about helping customers, about whatever it is that's driving you to that interview. Really own that and just show how excited you are. Like, it'll come across. Being very genuine is amazing. Okay, so now I'm going to go through what I did and what you should not do. The first thing I did when I decided I want to get a job in software was literally started just looking for jobs. I started using my network. I started saying, hey, I'm going to apply to this company and this company. I applied to my dream companies, which was pretty heartbreaking, because I got interviews at these companies, and I kind of mentioned I got interviews and then I would go to the very last round and I wouldn't get the job. And when you're interviewing at a company you really, really want to work at and they say no, that sucks. And you really think it's about you, but it's not. It's literally about, were you the right fit for that role? And if you weren't, what were they looking for in a person? Maybe they're looking for someone with like 3 more years of experience than you. You literally can't do anything about that. Or is it the way you presented yourself? Was there some type of fear that you were communicating that they caught on to? Did you not have crisp enough answers? There's so much prep that goes into interviewing. And that is literally what I learned over 9 months. So pretty much, how do you start transitioning into starting your job hunt? Oh, wrong slide. Do something. Okay. First thing you do is like take your resume out and tear it apart. What I did was I had my resume and I said, okay, what's outdated? What doesn't work? Made one edit, went back to it the next day, redid the entire thing, made sure you have data on top, right? Software is really data driven. Make sure you have numbers, make sure you have metrics, KPIs, make sure you have those numbers. Make sure your points aren't repetitive. My resume is a page and a half. I know a lot of people say you only need one page resume. I think if you're not repeating your points, if you're really concise in what you're saying, then it's fine. But make sure it's not very repetitive because then people get lost in it. I literally went onto Google and typed in product manager resume and literally scanned like 20 resumes to figure out what it was that was working, what people would talk about. A lot of the time, the descriptions that they'll have on like recs that are on websites will tell you what they're looking for. Make sure you have those keywords in there. That like everything is a keyword search now. So make sure you have those in there so that recruiters will actually see the resume. What else? Make sure you highlight a lot of those skills I mentioned on the last slide. So like being cross-functional, having vision, making changes, and then find gaps. No one's resume is ever going to be perfect. Mine isn't perfect. No one's ever will be. But there's always going to be something that they really, really look for that you may not have. And if you don't have that, write it down. So for example, I didn't know how to write SQL. Wrote it down, and then I went and took a SQL course. I didn't know how to do like any mockups. I'd never done a mockup before. So I literally went and downloaded Balsamiq and I started doing my own mockups and building out projects. So literally working on side projects. If you don't know what you should be doing, trying to find if you can work on something extra in the office, saying, oh, you know, I'm really interested in software. I'd like to learn more. That's what I did. I literally started working on some software products within my hardware product. And understanding what an MVP is, some companies call it MVP, some companies call it MLP, which is minimal lovable product. So like in the end, it's all a prototype. So just really understanding what that means and what it really means to be an MVP. Automation is not an MVP, right? Building hardware out or software out for something, that's not an MVP. It could literally be pen and paper. So really figuring out what that is, how you would test things, and then what an A-B test is. I literally remember being asked in an interview, do you know what an A-B test is? And to this day, I don't remember what I said, but I think I said something around design, which is not what an A-B test is. So really actually knowing what those key skills are that people look for. After I worked on my resume for about a month, I then reached out to people who were my friends that were product managers, and I asked them to review my resume. It helps if the people you know are hiring managers, and they don't even have to be hiring product managers, but say, would you hire someone with this resume? If you wouldn't, why? And then can you go redline it for me? And I'll go make changes. I'll fix it. And really being open to change that resume up. I think my current resume is 25 iterations in. So literally changing it as much as you need to, customizing it for each job. It's a lot of work, but it definitely pays off. It's never going to be perfect. So you have to get it to a place where you say, okay, this literally communicates who I am as a person on a piece of paper. This is what I'm going to send out. Hopefully it works. And then having a really cool cover letter to go with it. I am torn on the value of cover letters. It really depends on the company you're applying for, but it's always good to have a cover letter that kind of goes out. So pretty much like if you're talking to a friend and you said, hey, they're like, hey, why do you think you're a good product manager? And whatever you say there should go in your cover letter. So it's literally what your resume can say about you. It's literally just those words. Okay. Then you start looking at companies. So pretty much making a list of all the companies you'd ever want to work for and then tiering them. So saying, okay, these are my top companies. These are okay companies. Like it would be cool to work there, but I'm not going to be heartbroken if I don't get the job. And then once you have that list, make sure your low priority companies are at the top and your high priority companies are at the very, very bottom. Because once you go through those low priority interviews, you'll have learned a lot of things on how to go through these interviews, how to talk to people, how to frame your answers. That by the time you get to these companies you're really excited about, you're like, oh, I got this. I already know what to say. This is perfect. That's a mistake I made, right? I went high tier first and then I went to the companies I wasn't excited about and then kind of scrambled them all in there. Didn't work. And then I would say I didn't mind in a spreadsheet, but pretty much writing out the people you know that work at those companies, or writing out the people you know who know people that work at those companies. So then you already like have like a target list early on. And then also telling people in your network that you're searching for a job. I would never say, I know some people would say, oh, it's like scary to tell people I'm job hunting. I want people to think like I'm good where I am. Everyone is always looking for a job. It's not a big deal. Literally just telling people, hey, I'm looking for a job. And then you never know the opportunities that are going to come up, because someone might be like, oh, you know, this really cool person who's looking for a PM job. This person, let me introduce you. And you have your connection right there. Okay, cool. So let's talk about your network. Networks are so important. Literally spending time to nurture your network is a lot of energy, but it's so valuable. Go through LinkedIn and not only find people who work at the companies you care about, but people who work at companies that might be kind of interesting. And then literally messaging people, cold messaging is actually really important. Literally just finding people at one company. You can message one person, but like, take for example, if you message one person at Google, do you think they're actually gonna see that message? Go message like 50 people and then see who bites and then who replies to you. It feels like spamming. LinkedIn might catch you. You can find ways around it. But literally you need to do that. You can't just message one person and hope it works. For example, I was really excited about a job in the digital health space, and I messaged some random person I didn't even know. And like, I had my pitch. I said, hi, my name is Namisha. I'm a product manager at HP. I've been there for about 3.5 years. This is why like I really care about the digital health space. Would you like to talk to me about your company? If you go in and say, hey, will you refer me? That's like a, like if someone sends me that message, I'm just like, I don't even know you. Like, why are you asking me to refer you? Like, try to get to know the person, build a relationship with them, and then let them offer to give you that referral. So when I went on this call, I literally just started asking, oh, what software do you guys use? What are you guys trying to do? What's your vision for the like the future? Where is this company going? And then at the end of that conversation, he's like, oh, I'd be really interested in referring you. And like, that's how you, like, you want to impress that person enough that they actually say, oh, why don't we refer this person? And then it's really valuable to kind of just talk to anybody that works at that company, honestly, because then you understand their problems and you can shape your product manager answers, like in these interviews, around those problems. This is going to get tiring, isn't it? Okay. Okay. And then research. You see how I haven't said get on a phone call for an interview yet? You got to do all this first. So do your research. Google the company. Go read a lot of articles about them. If you know what team you're interviewing for, go look at the team. I literally would have like a 2-page cheat sheet on every single company I was interviewing at with any piece of information I thought was important. And then go learn about the history. Go look, make sure they had any recent announcements. That's really important. Because your interviewers will be impressed that you did the legwork. I heard that a lot. They were like, oh, we didn't think people knew about that. It happened like 3 hours ago. But you caught up, and they will remember that. They will know like you're on top of your game. Okay, there's a couple of really important methodologies when it comes to interviewing. These are really critical because being a product manager is about having a framework. So if you don't have a framework in the way you talk, you won't have a framework in the way you think. So this is the STAR methodology. Pretty much, if someone said, hey, here is a product question, I don't know. Tell me about a time you had a problem at work. That was a very common problem. Like, right, how do you resolve it? Literally go describe the problem first. Say, in like 2 sentences, what was the problem you faced? And then go say what you did. Literally 2 more sentences, what you did to fix that problem. And then how the steps you actually took to get there. And then how that, like, what the result was at the very end. This is called a STAR methodology. Really, really important. You can use this for any type of question that ever comes up, because then it keeps you from like rambling and just saying like 20 things you didn't mean to say, and then you'll go like, oh no, what did I just say? Why did I do that? You will avoid all that with this methodology. So once you have that down, you go practice a lot. There's literally product questions all over the internet. go Google product manager interview questions, and you will find pages of questions. Just write a couple of them down. They're all pretty similar. And then write out what your answer would be. You'd be like, okay, how would I answer this question? Let me kind of practice it a couple of times. After you've written that out, you literally go find someone to practice with. I don't like practicing in front of the mirror. If that works for you, that's awesome. I can't do it. But start answering, like just start having people ask you a question and then respond to them. And what you'll find is that your answer is not tight enough. My problem was that I would always say the word we instead of I. So then that would make people say, but then what did you do? Right? Like people are like, but I don't understand what actions you took. Like what is the value of you as a person? So really having those people that will kind of tear your answers apart, because then they'll get really tight and they'll get really, really impressive. Also, your body language is really important. Your tone, your confidence. If you're like a little nervous, don't show it, right? You can't show it. And then just being really concise and telling details. And then have people make you think outside the box. I literally remember I was on my couch practicing with my boyfriend, and our roommate walks in and was like, all right, name two companies. I was like, all right, LinkedIn and Facebook. And he's like, okay, if they merged, what product would you build? Why? And give me the product strategy in like 3 minutes. And I literally did that. And literally the next day, someone at an interview was like, okay, name an industry. And I was like, mental health. He's like, go talk to me about a product and build a strategy around that industry. So you never know what they're going to ask. Think outside the box. Literally think of a question no one would ask you, and then practice it, because they might ask you. Product manager interviews are getting very repetitive nowadays, so people are asking different questions. So make sure you're kind of prepared to just think on your feet. If you have that STAR methodology written out, you will know. I just realized it's the wrong slide. If you have STAR methodology, though, you will be able to say, oh, I can answer this question really easily without worrying, because I already have a framework. Frameworks are so great. All right. One last thing before you can actually start applying for jobs. I don't know what's happening here. Let's go back. Okay. This is an amazing framework for product interviews. It's called a circles framework. So it's really similar to STAR, but there's a couple of extra steps involved. You can literally Google this. You'll find this in like any product manager interview book. But pretty much take the situation, understand what's going on. Then you have to go say, who is my customer? But you can't just say, oh, I'm going to target people who are, like, I care about mental health a lot. So I'm going to target people in the mental health space. That's not enough. Are you targeting kids? Are you targeting adults? Are you targeting college students? Write down who all those people are first, and then say why you're targeting one specific group of people. Then you can go say, okay, this is what this kind of person needs. These are customer needs. This is why it's really important for them. I understand my customer. Then you say, okay, but because I can't address everything, because I don't have like 10,000 engineers, I'm going to prioritize this list. And you go say, okay, this is the most important customer problem from 1 to 10, 1 to 5. List out your solutions. Say, okay, this is how I think we can do this. I would recommend saying more than one, like 2 or 3 solutions is pretty good. And then you go reprioritize that, actually. So what you do is you say, okay, these are my trade-offs. This is why I can do certain things. This is the metric it is going to drive. Metrics, like, it's not written out here, but you need to say, talk about metrics right here. And then once you understand what metrics you're trying to drive, you go reprioritize and say, this is why it's so important. I'm going to summarize why this is important. I'll give you a quick like digest of this entire thing, and then you're done. So that works for any type of product interview, product vision, product strategy. Go Google this. It's amazing. And then you can start interviewing. So pretty much what I did when I started interviewing, I interviewed starting of March last year, interviewed through June, got really, really tired of the rejection, took a break for a month, came to product school, and then I started reapplying again, and I literally went crazy applying. I literally threw a bunch of applications out there. I asked people to refer me. I started with tier C companies. There's a couple of websites out there that will just kind of take your resume and then find companies that match you. Went to them and I practiced interviewing a lot. Once I felt comfortable doing that, then I went to companies I really cared about. And then I started interviewing there. So you apply to C first, like your C tier companies, and then your A and B companies in a group. And then you space out those companies. So like, for example, I ended up having 15 interviews in the span of 3 weeks. That's a lot of interviews for 3 weeks. So I would say, okay, Mondays, I suck. I'm terrible at interviewing on Mondays. I think we got on a call. I was like, oh my God, that was the worst thing I've ever done in my life. So then I knew, okay, if people want to interview me Mondays, they're not companies I really like, I'm okay with like not working at. They have to be companies I'm okay saying, oh, sorry, that was bad. That's not really who I am, but it's okay. I'm not like heartbroken about it. Mondays were always tier C companies. And then throughout the week, I would like put one tier A or tier B company. And you really want to space out those interviews. So like if you interview Monday, don't interview until Wednesday. So you can take that one day in between to really practice. Write out those cheat sheets I talked about, those like 1-2 pagers. Understand your company. Go through your list of questions again and talk about how and think about how you would address it for that specific company. What they care about, like what are the metrics they drive? What are their customers? And literally practice all your questions again and you'll be good for the interview. Yeah, so that is what I would say with the interview process. Tiering is really important because interviewing is exhausting. Also, like, make sure you have a lot of vacation days because on-sites are like usually like half a day. So if you're interviewing with a lot of companies at once and trying to just get through it, you need those vacation days. So then I think we're actually there. We're done. My last piece of recommendation is that applying for a product manager job is a marathon. For me personally, it felt like people didn't realize I'm a product manager. In the end, being a product manager, the foundation is the same, but people don't recognize that unless you tell them. People don't know what to think. So if I'm saying, hey, I'm a product manager for 3.5 years, it's like, great, but I don't know anything about hardware. So if I explained the complexity to people, they would say, I don't understand what that means still. So really being able to communicate how hard your job is, because none of us are in the tech space just like coasting, right? Your job is complex. You're really good at it for a reason. Communicate that so people understand, and then keep communicating that through your entire interview. Tell them why you're so good at your job. Tell them why you'd be a good fit in their company. You'll get it there with practice. It took me, 9 months to get there? But literally just making sure you're really confident, talking through why you'd be so great at the role. This entire process I went through is literally like the job, right? Product management is a lot of research. It's literally doing all your due diligence, knowing who your customers are, like I said, 20 times. But then doing all the legwork behind it. I've been at Twitch for a while now, and everything I did in this interview process has been so valuable for my current job. I don't think I would be as successful in what I do now if I hadn't gone through all this and literally learned how to build a framework. I still have days where I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't have a framework. What's going on? Why am I freaking out? And the answer literally goes back to, do I know the circles methodology? Let me go build out a framework because something is missing, right? It's kind of like a science in the end where you're saying, okay, there's certain steps to get there, certain things to think through. But if you practice all that through your interview questions are around how do you do that for a product itself. So if you practice that a lot, then you know what you're kind of doing. And then you're learning on the way because every company also is very different. But that is everything I have. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.